Coming from the lower eight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show. And, God, it's empty in here. The chick chair is completely empty.
That's always bad.
That's bad news. Diana Brown, of course, is still in rehab because it's so hard. People don't understand when you get so famous like we are here.
So quickly, yeah.
On the Are You Serious Show. I mean, you know, sure, we get millions of dollars and, you know, get to hang out with cool people like Paris Hilton and Puffy Combs. Which is fun, of course. Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's rough.
Yeah, it's...
And you start taking too many drugs, and that's what happened to Diana Brown.
Yeah.
And so she's in rehab. And then Sherry Miller, who sometimes comes in here and hangs out if we let her, also fell ill, I'm sure, from the pressure.
Fame has consequences. People mm-hmm. need to realize that before mm-hmm. they wish for it.
But anyway, I'm here. I managed to make it out the door, and Jeff Deal is here, so I guess I'll just say welcome to Jeff and welcome to myself.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this. Step right up.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world. So everybody is talking about this video. All over the country they're talking about it, actually, this video that the San Francisco cops made. And so I looked at it, and the video definitely increased my respect for the police. I've never been, you know, that fond of cops in general, and my respect for police was pretty low. But this is a pretty well done cheesy video, and I think they get the points for opening with the music from the hamster dance.
Yeah,
I recognize that right away. The Charlie's Angel parody was pretty funny. Actually, it looked more like a parody of the softcore porn films that in turn parodied Charlie's Angels in the 1970s. So, I mean, it's very hip and self-referential and almost like postmodern attempt by these members of the San Francisco Police Department. So I'd like to think that if they do get fired from the police department, they could find a home here at Mondo Globo. So thumbs up, man. Thumbs up for the video work of the San Francisco police.
Yeah, you know, I've had a strange response to this whole thing. First of all, I thought, well, it was a ridiculous overreaction.
Right.
And I watched the videos, and I was like, hey, well, you know what? Yeah, I can actually feel... I mean, I bet there aren't very, very many police forces in this country, let alone in the world even, that have a sense of humor and, you know, are hip or anything.
Right.
I mean, I thought, wow, this is something I can actually be proud of for a change about, you know, my city's police force. And then, you know, Gavin Newsom comes out with his slicked back hair and has his big press conference. And I got pissed at first, and I was like, what a bunch of thin-skinned liberal idiots. But then I was doing some reading on why Newsom probably did this, like this preemptive strike of sort
right.
of showing
right.
the video and then inviting. And actually, I have to say I have some admiration for Newsom on this, and not that he's doing the right thing per se, but that he's an interesting politician to watch, and he's got a bit of an anarchist in him, I think. I think what he's actually done here is he's opening up the door to a certain level of chaos, but he's going to use that to completely reform the police department and a number
well,
of other departments.
There are those politics behind it. He's been wanting to reform the police department, and this might be giving him an excuse. these may just happen to be the guys that he wants to get over, you know, get rid of, and they happen to.
Well, what I read was, you know, he's going to like piggyback a bunch of other investigations and reforms that go beyond just this actual incident, but that can touch on anything regarding race or sexism or homophobia or anything. I like that about him. He invites a certain level of chaos into, you know, the status quo, and because I think he knows he can't completely control it. He doesn't know what the result's going to be, but it'll be something
I think it really could end up being a mess for him, though. I mean, it has alienated so much of the police department. But, I mean, just like getting back to the video, I mean, when I first heard about it, you know, I mean, there's two responses. One is, you know, these stupid thin-skinned, you know, PC liberals being absurd. And then the other thing was, oh, well, I bet it's pretty nasty video. You know, I bet it's pretty racist and homophobic and all those things. And it's kind of like, you know, somebody says there's a really edgy black comedian on HBO right now, and you turn it on and it's Whoopi Goldberg, and you go, what? You know, it's like, what planet are these people? I mean, it's so mild.
Right.
You know, I mean, within context of modern media, it was the fucking Brady Bunch.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, and not only that, but they were poking fun at themselves more than anything else. It wasn't like their goal was to, you know, make fun of a certain race or make fun of it just wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, San Francisco sometimes is just Kansas upside down. You know, the rest of the country gets freaked out by Janis Joplin's tits, and the San Francisco, they get freaked out by a police video. But
as long as they're freaking out.
We're here with Richard Hell, novelist, poet, rock musician, and Hell may be best known to some of you for the brief period in the mid-1970s when he put some of his great poetry into song. For Richard Hell and the Voidoids, the Voidoid album Blank Generation is one of the most influential and one of the best recordings that decade. But what you may not know is that he started off publishing books and magazines under the imprints Genesis, Grasp, and then Dot Books, I guess way back in 1966. There have been a bunch of recordings and books from Hell over the years, and you can find out more by going to richardhell.com. But today we're going to talk with him a bit about his most recent novel, Godlike, published earlier this year, and his music collection, Spurts, released this year by Sire Rhino. And welcome, Richard. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay.
All right, man. So I guess you're pretty happy with the release of Spurts. That's what it looked like when I read on your website. Is this the recording you've always wanted to make?
You asking me if I'm happy with Spurts?
Yeah. You had did you have less control over the product in the past? Do you feel like this is a realization of something you've wanted to do?
Well, it's not exactly that I had less control in the past. I always had adequate amount of control. I just I made a lot of misjudgments.
Oh, okay. Well, wasn't anybody else?
I shouldn't put it exactly that way. I mean, you know, in the heat of the moment when I was recording, I did things that sometimes worked, sometimes didn't. Each of the previous albums I'd made, you know, prior to this compilation that I put together this year, is a sort of, you know, record of the moment when those recordings were made, whether it was the album Blank Generation or Destiny Street or Dim Stars. Those are actually the only albums I made in the studio. I mean, we did one prior compilation, which was all the sort of odds and ends, outtakes and demos and stuff that that we thought were worth preserving. But there were really only those three albums, and they're very different from each other, and each of them sort of extreme in its own way. And I'd always wanted to make a record that was sort of more consistent, that presented all the stuff I'd done that met certain standards, and so that I it would be a record that I could listen to all the way through without ever having to sort of explain why that part sounded the way it did, and in a way that was maybe sort of apologetic.
Right.
And, so I'd wanted to do that for a long time, and that's what Spurts is. Though, you know, I mean, the way that I describe the thing to people is I get to distinguish it from the standard conventional best of album.
Right.
Because my own private conception of the thing is that it's my only album. I would rather look at it that way, that the last, 30 years, you know, three albums of recording that I've done were all were the Spurt sessions, and the other albums that got released were more or less just sort of
demos,
pirated outtakes of the Spurt sessions. And this is my only real record. It is actually about half the songs I ever wrote. That's pretty extravagant for a best of. It's really, you know, it's half the songs I ever wrote and recorded. So it's my only record.
So basically you exercised more aesthetic judgment, I guess, or took more time with it, and
some of the other records were. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's hard for me to hear you here. I'm thinking you've asked me the question, then I start answering it, then I hear, then no, you're still, there's more to your question. But
that's right.
If I understand you, some of the albums were rushed. Some of them were made under difficult circumstances in other ways. And so I did a lot of remixing, and everything's remastered, so I present the stuff in the best possible light, and I'm happy about it.
Well, congratulations on it. On the way over here,
thanks.
On the way over here, I had my little iPod on random selections, and one of your songs came up. It was a song called "The Plan," off of Blank Generation. I always really liked that song. It's such a strange song. It seems to be, I don't know, about trying to create a transmutational child or some kind of alchemy. It was always very mysterious to me. Do you have any
yeah.
You have any thoughts about that song?
Pardon me?
You have any thoughts about that one?
About that song?
Yeah.
Well, that's one that didn't make the cut for Spurts. But it's a song I like a lot. I think it's a little bit Velvets-esque.
Uh-huh.
There's a great solo by Quine on it.
Yeah.
And the subject of it, I think, was what was responsible for. I remember one of the things that one of the little minor things that made me proud of that album back when it was released, Blank Generation, was that, you know, that Columbia Record Club, it's the massive mail order record scam thing that in my generation most kids ended up joining and then never paying for their records.
12 records for a dollar.
You know, penny. Yeah, right. The year that Blank Generation came out, it was included in their catalog. And it was the only record in the catalog, you know, which is huge. I mean, it was half the records in print, that had an asterisk by it, saying it wasn't suitable for children. And I think that was because of the song, The Plan. Did you were you aware of what this the sort of story of the plan is with this? There's a kind of narrative.
The woman comes out, and there's something where people are around an operating table wearing masks, and there's a child born, and you're left with the forum.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was like a Crowleyan magical love child or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're on the track. Yep.
I have the advantage of just having listened to it.
So, yeah. God, gee, man, it's so hard to hear what you're saying. It's I hope my answers aren't too off the wall, you know. But the story is of a guy who's so alienated that he decides that he's going to give the rest of his life over to having a daughter who he'll raise to be his wife.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I knew I liked it. now I like it even more. Let's talk about your book, Godlike, which I liked very much. I found it very an emotional kind of novel, actually. It seems in many ways to be about aging and about accepting aging or not accepting aging. And there's even like a pretty nice section about the attractiveness of an aged face. And is this one of your first times dealing with that subject in text?
The desire to chew over that issue, that matter, was part of my, it was something I knew I wanted. It was something that motivated me to write the book. It was definitely a subject that I wanted to talk about in the book. But I don't think of it as being the central subject. It's definitely a theme. It's interesting. I mean, it's been funny because interviewers have brought that up once or twice. You know, it isn't always referred to. It's not the first thing that people think about when they think of the book, but it's come up a couple of times. And I found it funny because a couple of interviewers have interpreted my treatment of the thing, you know, of the discussion in the book of what it's like to outlive your youth, which is, which is a focus of the book, in certain spots. Interviewers have treated it as if that's depressing, and I didn't think of it that way, and I don't think of the book as looking at it that way. I mean, I try in the book to be frank about it. I don't pretend that it's any prettier than it is, but my own sense of the experience of outliving my youth, and the way I thought I was discussing it in the book was to basically regard it as something interesting and desirable, even that it's that the knowledge gained outweighs the losses of maybe in other areas.
That's kind of what I got from it. I thought it was pretty reflective. Anyway, we're going to break for about a couple of minutes and listen to some music by Richard Hell, and we'll be right back.
Are you serious? I withdrew from the street and all human-like zones. I'd had it. I was mush to the bones. I covered the windows. I was taking no call. Then I thought for a month inside the alien wall. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. Now I know they don't tell you so. But I can recall it all. I was at a loss. What can I do now? Well, I called up a girl I knew for so many years. I'd seen her in shock, I'd seen the last of her tears. I admired her style, from her toes to her brain. She accepted my plan, and so she caught the next train. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, whoa, I can recall it all. I remember home. We would secretly smile inside our surgical mask, but we were serious too. We accomplished our task. Her schedule was followed, a daughter was born, and so her mother departed. I was left with her form. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, they don't tell you so. But I can recall it all. This is where it counts. Her education's begun. I'm intent on success. Her breathtaking beauty, it brings out my best. I once knew true love, she won't know another. Life is renewed, my little girl is my lover. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, they don't tell you so. Now I know, whoa, I can recall it all.
We're back with Richard Hell. We're talking about the book Godlike. It seems there's an obvious connection between the relationship of your two characters, Paul and T, and the famous affair between Verlaine and Rimbaud. At least that's what I read into it, and I guess a lot of other people have read that into it also. In some ways, I thought maybe the character could be older and younger versions of the same person, because I mean I sort of related to both characters as sort of being like older and younger versions of myself. So did some of that go into your writing? The distinction between,
well, you know, I mean, to me the two characters are very different. I mean, in the book, the older guy, even when he's describing himself at an earlier time. I mean, maybe we should explain that the structure of the book is that the outer layer of it is a guy in his mid-50s in a hospital after a nervous breakdown of some type. It's not really described very much detail, but he's clearly a guy who is kind of mentally shaky, but nothing any more serious than half the people I know.
Mm-hmm.
But a heavy drinker who, you know, usually ends up in a hospital for 2 or 3 weeks a year, kind of recuperating from his drinking and his sort of delicate nervous state. Anyway, in 1997, when he's in his mid-50s, he's spending one of these recuperative periods in a New York City hospital and decides that he wants to use the time to write a book about his relationship with a younger guy. They're both poets, the older guy and the younger guy, that took place in the early 70s. In other words, 25 years before this 1997 when he's writing the book. But the relationship was one of the most intense things in his life. It still has a lot of, carries a lot of power for him, and that's why he wants to write this book, to sort of to do his best to preserve that experience. And so he's describing this year and a half that took place in the early 70s when he was 27 and the kid who he had the affair with was 16 in New York City. And so but they're very different. The guy Paul, the older guy, is kind of flighty and frivolous and kind of off the wall and irresponsible and just kind of lighter weight than the younger guy. The younger guy is very focused and intense and very kind of antisocial and sort of alienated and outside of everything, with this sort of vision of a life that's completely committed to the values that he also holds as a writer, a poet. And he's a serious guy. The older guy is more lightweight. To me, they're not. They're very different people. But at the same time, I know what you mean. I've always felt like writing a book was a lot like acting. That you had to rely on your own experience to get for the characters in the interior lives of the people who you're describing in the books. Though, you know, they might not, just as for an actor who's playing a character, you know, you can play a murderer relying on certain strains in yourself to make it real without actually having committed murders, you know. So, but it's true. It you have to find those characters somewhere inside yourself. So they are me to some extent, but I also think of them as very different for me. And I also had certain people in mind that I was picturing in my head when I was writing them, not least being Rambo and Verlaine, who were really the sort of provided the kind of basic storyline, you know, for the relationship of those two for me in the book. It's a kind of I wasn't strict about it, but I used it as, I used the Rambo Verlaine history as a sort of, you know, skeleton that for me to follow in the narrative of what happened between those two in the book. Though, yeah, it's not exact by any means.
Yeah, I mean, I find when I was reading it, I was wondering what was going to happen to T, the Rambo character, towards the end of the book. And, of course, Rimbaud's famous end, you know, going off and going off to Africa and then returning. And it was a pretty satisfactory ending, actually. Were you raised Catholic? There's a great little discussion
no,
in there about Catholicism.
I had to do a lot of research. I had to do a lot of research for that Catholic part. Though, you know, I mean... But that's also derived from the Rambo Verlaine story, because Verlaine converted to Catholicism. Or, I mean, I guess he was probably, he was brought up Catholic, but he became, you know, he really bought into it at a certain point. Basically, when he was sent to jail for shooting Rambo, he got religion in jail. And actually my wife had a Catholic upbringing, though it wasn't as, you know, full-fledged, all cylinders firing, as a lot of people, her parents were pretty casual about it, but she did go to church, and they were Catholics, and she had a period when she was when she was a kid, where she took it really seriously, and she was really helpful to me, and getting an idea of what, you know, what that meant. And, but I did a lot of other research too. And something that was actually really useful was, this great movie, by, oh, shoot, what's the guy? Hang on one second. Let me check. What was that movie about Pierre Morin? Who's the director of the French, what's the name of the noir director? What? Yeah. It was by the guy who makes great noir films, Melville, Jean Pierre Melville, directed, made a movie starring Belmondo as a priest called, I think it was called the guy's name, Pierre Morin, and that was really a revelation to me. Because I suddenly got the appeal of a certain really deep appeal of Catholicism, which is something I allude to in the book, but I learned it from that movie, the Melville movie starring Belmondo about a priest, namely that how seductive it's got to be to have a priest to confess to, for the reason that and just to talk to go to for advice, because it's a person whose whole purpose is to be interested in your soul. What could be more appealing than that? You know, it's a lot more appealing than a psychiatrist, for instance, which is the modern equivalent, more or less, you know, or the secular equivalent. But to have somebody whose whole mission in life is to is the health of your soul. What could be more, you know, what could be more appealing than that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very generous kind of thing. I mean, you get somebody who actually looks after your soul personally. So there is a generosity about it, and you don't have to pay for it either. You've been writing about films for Black Book, and I've read some of your reviews. That must be a lot of fun. What do you look for in a film? What makes you want to go see a film?
What makes me want to go see a film?
Yeah. What do you look for?
Is that what you asked?
Yeah, I mean, a specific film.
What do I look for?
Yeah, a specific film, not just generally.
Oh, I see what you mean. I mean, you know, film has been called the art of the 20th century, and I think that's probably true. I guess video games are catching up, but yeah. I mean, maybe they'll be the art of the 21st century, but the great thing about film is it synthesizes so many other arts. You know, I mean, it's sound, music and everything. It's theater with dialogue and real people playing parts, and it's, you know, writing however you want to conceive of writing. You know, you know, a guy like Godard often has actually words printed on the screen, not only in dialogue. It's just so rich. You know, it gives you all the stimulation that any art medium does, except more, because it has, you know, it includes so many means for, playing on your sense organs. So, yeah, I mean, what I look for is the same thing I look for in books and music, and, you know, it's namely, you know, God, there's so many ways of describing what interesting art does for you, but I guess maybe the broadest one is that it just is it stimulates you. It makes you, suggests, it gives you different emotions, it suggests different ideas, I don't know how to be more specific.
Okay, well,
but shoot, goddammit, are you, man? We got a late start, and I have somebody coming over here in about 3 minutes.
We did get a late start. I'm
going to go downstairs.
All right, I'm going to have to let you go. I want to tell people to check out your book, Godlike, and check out richardhell.com, because there's lots of cool stuff on it, and I've been enjoying reading your writing on film. Let me ask you just really briefly. It seems like American independent film, stuff like Jarmusch and Todd Solondz and Darren Aronofsky, seems to be sort of taking up some of the attention that we used to give to European art films. You think they're up to par, or is that too much to bite off in a minute?
American independent film catching up with the best years.
Yeah, best European.
Like the new wave or something like that?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I got my, to me, the interesting new guy is Harmony Korine. I think he's really, he's the most exciting new filmmaker since a guy like Godard, to my mind. And, you know, things are promising, though. I think America in general is probably starting its decline. But anyway, man, I got to go, because they're going to be here any second.
All right, man. Thanks for talking to us.
It's been not saying, thanks for thinking of me. And, I hope you find something in this.
We will. Yeah. All right. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We'd like to thank Richard Hell for staying on the phone with us this week, despite some technical complexities. The music you heard was The Plan by Richard Hell and the Voidoids. Next week, author and original Riot Girl Lynn Breedlove will be joining us. The Are You Serious Show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Subscribe to all of our shows at mondoglobo.net. Thanks for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.